दया सागर
Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. We will continue listen to Tangent's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146 Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once more to Dharma Radio. I hope you've had a good week. Let's start today with a very short story I read recently on the internet. It is posted on a site with the URL storylovers.com, and it's by a woman named Louise Sir, but it appears she doesn't know where it actually originated. It goes like this. A baby girl is born with wings. The neighbors think it's awful and tell the parents that having the wings removed is best for the child. The parents are content to let be and send the neighbors away. The child grows and the wings grow. The neighbors return and suggest clipping the wings in order not to hinder the child's growth. The parents, still content, send the neighbors away again. The child grows and the wings grow. The neighbors return and want the wings to be bound up. We're only thinking of the child's welfare. What can you be thinking of? The parents answer, we're thinking of teaching her to fly. And that seems a lovely example of what we've been talking about over the last few programs, in which we discussed how to develop patience in the face of our own and others' anger. In our story, if the parents had reacted with anger to the neighbors, they would have just caused so many neighborhood difficulties. And if they had listened to the neighbors, what aggression they would have caused against their daughter. But look at the result when they practiced calm compassion and acceptance. In Buddhism, among all the negative emotions that cause us difficulties, anger is regarded as the worst because of its intensely destructive nature. It harms us and all our relationships in the present and in the future. The imprint or habitual tendency that anger leaves on the mind will ripen in our coming existence in a great deal of suffering for ourselves. Anger is the primary cause for landing up in a hellish situation in a future life. So while we have this relatively peaceful existence, with its many good conditions, it will be a good idea to practice developing patience as much as we can. Patience is the antidote to anger, and the more we practice it, the weaker our anger will become. As I've said before, patience is not just an attitude of grin and bear it, but a mind of calm acceptance that reacts to difficult situations with compassion and understanding. Of course, that slips off the tongue ever so easily, but to practice and accomplish it is much more difficult. We are so habituated to our own point of view and attitudes that whenever they are even slightly threatened, anger arises without any introduction or invitation at all. That is why we have to at least make the attempt to practice patience. But now, before we go further into the text we are following, the sixth chapter of Shanti Deva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Life, which deals with patience, let's take a moment to set our motivation for participating in this program. As you know, the most important part of any action is the motivation. An action that may appear very negative could actually be quite the opposite, with a strong positive motivation. And equally, some action that could seem to be filled with kindness due to a bad motivation could be altogether negative. Like someone caring very well for an old dying person only because they want to run off with the old person's possessions after death. Now let's make sure our motivation is not like that, but is purely to realize our highest positive potential so we can be of greatest benefit not only to ourselves, but others as well. Thank you. In our last program, we saw how Shantideva set out to radically change our way of looking at people that irritate us. He first pointed out that we generally don't get angry with inanimate things. For instance, if we develop a headache, we don't get angry with our head. Why then do we get angry with animate things, like other people? Both inanimate and animate things, he points out, are subject to the same laws of dependent arising. We tend to think that they have some kind of independent inherent existence, but Shantideva says that nothing exists like that. When another person annoys us, it's not that they do so willingly and independently. They're under a whole raft of conditionings that more or less force them to act in that way. Some years ago, protesters from around the world gathered in Moscow, where the mayor had banned a pro-gay march. The protesters wanted him to let the march go ahead. However, a crowd of anti-gay supporters of the mayor also turned up and physically attacked the pro-gay protesters. Now, without condoning the use of brutal force in any way, we cannot just condemn the anti-gay supporters without taking into consideration the causes and conditions that brought them to that stance. If we took into account their family backgrounds and the peer pressures that they went through, their karma and so on, it becomes more clear that they had practically no choice but to act in the way they did. So there's no need to get angry with them. That, of course, doesn't mean to say that they should be allowed to just go around gay bashing, or any other bashing for that matter. But if through understanding we don't develop hatred in our own minds while our nose is bleeding, we can find other ways of stopping the unacceptable behavior than picking up a nearby bit of wood and laying into the person who hit us. A classic example of non-violent response is, of course, Nelson Mandela, who was bashed in one way or another for most of his life, but by practicing patience and understanding, became a gigantic winner in the end. Imagine if he'd been another Robert Mugabe. Shantideva goes on to show that if something is independent and permanent, like a soul or God or even a person, it would be impossible by very definition for them to act or relate, create or destroy. A permanent independent thing does not change, so cannot do anything or have any relationships. So nothing can be independent of causes and conditions. And realizing this, we don't get angry with others when they are caught up in a chain of events that almost dictates their actions. Because no phenomenon has its own inherent independent existence, because everything is made up of other things, causes and conditions, phenomena are like illusions. So we have no cause to get angry. You know, if a magician conjures up a venomous snake, anybody who knows it's just an illusion will not be scared. But someone who believes in the magician's tricks will be quite terrified. Shantideva says we should be like the person who knows it's all just an illusion and not let our minds get caught up in the angry story so easily. Another great master, Thupten Rinpoche, who was actually the teacher at the Dagi Center in Dunedin, explains it like this. When someone harms us, they do not act autonomously. Rather, they are under the influence of three things. The first thing is negative emotion. The dormant seeds of negative emotion were the instigator. This force is in the mental continuum, the mind of all non-liberated sentient beings. It's not just in the minds of people who are angry. Even though we may not have anger in our minds at the moment, we all carry the seeds of anger. The second force that triggers the person's harm to one is their perception that you have interfered with their likes and dislikes. And the third force in the mind of the person that prompts them to act in a harmful way is improper mental activity. By this, I mean non-judicious or impulsive behavior rather than rational action. When these three are present, people lose self-control. They cannot help themselves and they get angry. We must consider these three forces which influence the agent to act in a harmful way. When the agent harms you, they are not acting maliciously. Rather, they have fallen victim to these three forces within themselves. Without these in the mind, nobody can ever have anger towards anyone. When we meet someone, we don't think, I will get angry with him. It just doesn't happen like that. When another person sees you for the first time, they don't have a desire in them to get rid of you. That's because these forces are not active in them at that time. When the agent does harm one out of cruelty and aggression, they do so for a mixture of those three reasons. When they are present, we unfortunately use them as justification for angry retaliation. Because of this, we gradually begin to dislike or even hate someone. And so Shantideva says in his verse 33 of the chapter we're following, "So when seeing an enemy or even a friend committing an improper action, by thinking that such things arise from conditions, I shall remain in a happy frame of mind." And now for another violent, potentially depressing story. You may remember that the Minister of Agriculture in Japan in 2007, Toshikatsu Matsuoka, committed suicide after intense questioning by a parliamentary committee into financial irregularities in his department. At the time, CNN noted that this solution to a difficult problem was not uncommon in Japan. Over 32,000 older people, like Mr. Matsuoka, had committed suicide in Japan in 2004 because of financial problems. I'm quoting this to illustrate the next verses from Shantideva's text. "If things were brought into being by choice, then since no one wishes to suffer, suffering would not occur to any embodied creature. Through not being careful, people even harm themselves with thorns and other things, and for the sake of obtaining women and the like, they become obsessed and deprive themselves of food. And there are some who injure themselves through the unmeritorious deeds of hanging themselves, leaping from cliffs, eating poison and unhealthy foods. If, when under the influence of disturbing conceptions, people will even kill their treasured selves, how can they be expected not to cause harm to the bodies of other living beings?" In these verses, Shantideva explains another way of looking at people who tend to make us angry. Nobody intentionally wants to experience suffering, yet through carelessness or ignorance, people cause lots of harm to themselves, even up to the point of killing themselves. The Japanese agricultural minister is a case in point. Of course, he did not want suffering. One presumes he became a high politician because he thought he would get happiness through the attainment of power, status, and wealth. No doubt being a politician is stressful and sometimes difficult, but overall for him, others' respect far outweighed the difficulties and was extremely meaningful in his life. So much so that when he appeared to lose that respect, he could no longer bear to live. This is what Shantideva means when he talks about afflictions seizing beings. Here, the afflictions are attachment and ignorance. And Shantideva says that if people are so strongly overtaken by afflictions that they kill themselves, how can we expect them not to get angry with others or cause them suffering? A prime example is suicide bombers who believe they will gain some kind of paradise by killing themselves and others. Of course, we can condemn them out of hand, but if we were to consider their karma, the situation they're born into, the conditioning they go through throughout their lives, and the pressure to behave in that sort of way, we may get some understanding and not develop hatred in our own hearts, even while we do not in any way condone their actions. As Pema Chodron says, "There are seemingly no limits to how far we'll go to achieve happiness, even when we know this happiness has never lasted in the past. If we're so willing to harm ourselves, it's not hard to understand how we could harm others." And so, in his next verse, Shantideva says, Even if I cannot develop compassion for all such people who through the arisal of disturbing conceptions set out to try and kill me and so forth, the last thing I should do is to become angry with him. So we might disagree and say we have no time for people who blow themselves up for the sole purpose of harming others, and we march off in high dudgeon to find and kill them. Isn't that mind of harm exactly the same as the mind of the suicide bomber? His mind is full of hate, and our mind is also full of hate. He thinks he's right, and I think I'm right, and we are both out to prove by murder, if necessary, that the other is wrong. Will this solve the situation, stop people being harmed and end the war? Or will it just make matters a whole lot worse? I think we've already had the answer in Iraq and similar places. Shanti Davis says that if we're not able to feel compassion for the people who come against us, at least we can curb our anger, realizing that these people are not in their right mind. For who in their right mind would dream of going out with bombs strapped to their bodies to harm others? Their afflictive emotions and conditioning have made them insane. And do we get angry with someone behaving badly who we know is insane? No, we usually develop some compassion, or at least a mind of non-harm to them, even though we may take some strong countermeasures to stop their bad behavior. Most of us would certainly not think of inflicting more harm on an insane person, realizing that they are already going through a lot of suffering. Even if it were the nature of the childish to cause harm to other beings, it would still be incorrect to be angry with them, for this would be like begrudging fire for having the nature to burn. Anyone who is a parent knows that small kids get into all sorts of trouble because they don't know what is dangerous and what is not. People who are overtaken by afflictive emotions are like children. They don't really know what is harmful to themselves and others or not. Shanti Deva points out that if being harmful is in their very nature, their fabric, then we can have no cause to get angry with them. They're like that because they cannot help it. It would be like getting angry with fire for being hot. Or, for instance, if I go to a lion park where I know the lions are wild and untamed, it would be senseless to get out of my car to pet them and then get angry when they attack me. And even if the fault were temporary, and they who are by nature reliable, it would still be incorrect to be angry, for this would be like begrudging space for allowing smoke to arise in it. But if beings are really good by nature, and their faults temporary and dependent on circumstances, again, there is no reason to get angry with them. Do we get angry with the sky when it's overcast with clouds? Of course not. It's not the essential nature of the sky to be overcast. As far as the sky is concerned, the clouds are just circumstantial. They will, in due course, be gone, and the sky will be clear again. So to be angry with the sky because it's not clear is senseless. Similarly, if beings are essentially good but occasionally overtaken by faults, we have no reason to get angry with their faults. Realizing they will soon pass, we can practice patience and keep the peace. We often get caught up in a story of a situation, forgetting about the whole picture. Usually, there's much more to the situation than just the story our mind focuses on. And if we keep our mind on the bigger picture, anger will have less chance to arise. I come back to the example of a person who cuts in front of us on the motorway. Sure, we can get angry and hoot and curse and even indulge in a bout of road rage. But that is just looking at a very small part of what is going on, based on a strong sense of I. If instead of getting angry, we thought, wow, that guy must be really late for work, or he must be really stressed out, maybe he had a fight with his mother-in-law this morning, or some such thought that considers his situation, anger is much less likely to take over our mind. That is looking at a bigger picture than the one that says, he cut me off. I'll get that miserable so-and-so. You see, the one way of approaching the situation causes problems, the other is able to let it go, and everybody stays much more calm. Then Shanti Deva presents yet another way of considering a situation to prevent anger arising. He says, if I become angry with a yielder, although I'm actually harmed by his stick, then since he too is secondary, being in turn incited by hatred, I should really be angry with his hatred. Shanti Deva takes the example of somebody beating us with a stick. But of course, this can apply to any situation where someone is harming us. What is actually creating the pain in our body? It's the stick, isn't it? But we don't get angry with a stick. We get angry with a person wielding the stick. But, says Shanti Deva, our logic is faulty. For if we look further, we can see that in the same way as the stick is under the control of the person is under control of the afflictive emotion, in this case anger, which is driving him to do what he's doing. So the actual aggressor here is the afflictive emotion, the anger, and the person is just an intermediary, just like the stick. So why don't we get angry with the afflictive emotion instead of the person? Remember what Thupten Rinpoche said nearer the beginning of the program, that when someone harms us, they are under the control of three things: negative emotion, interference with their likes and dislikes, and improper mental activity. In explaining this verse, Thupten Rinpoche now goes on to say, suppose an agent harms you in a really painful way, for example, hitting you on the head with a stick. Naturally, you will feel and react to the pain. In the heat of the moment, you just lash out without giving yourself the chance to examine who or what has harmed you. However, when the event is over and you are slightly calmer, you can do so. Ask yourself, should I get angry with a direct agent of harm or the indirect one? I'm justified in getting angry with a direct agent of harm, but analysis tells me that the stick is the direct agent, and it's quite silly to get angry with a stick. Shouldn't I get angry with the indirect agent of harm, the negative emotions which used the mind of the agent of harm, causing him to act in a violent way? If you're really going to get angry, it makes more sense to be angry with those negative emotions. When we are harmed by someone, three things are involved: the instigator, the instrument, and the actual aggression. What directly harms us is the instrument used. What is behind that is the negative emotion. However, we don't hold this responsible. We tend to always hold the direct agent fully responsible. As a responsible person, we should more fairly blame the instigator, the one who planned the deed. This point again reinforces whether the agent had free will to harm or not. And now Shantideva invokes the power of karma to explain why we are harmed. He says, previously, I must have caused similar harm to other sentient beings. Therefore, it is right for this harm to be returned to me, who is the cause of injury to others. And then he goes on to point out that we only suffer harm because it's payback time. Under the influence of self-grasping and self-cherishing, we tend to see others at fault. But who created the karma to experience the harm in the first place? If you don't create the karma, you don't experience the result. But if you do create the karma and don't purify it, you will definitely have to face the consequences. These are two of the axioms under which karma works. So if I'm being beaten by another person, it is primarily because in the past I created harm to another being. In doing so, I placed an imprint on my mind, which is now ripening in this experience for me. It is useless for me just to blame the other person. He's not just beating me serendipitously because I happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. I planted the seed, and now the conditions are ripe for the thing to germinate. For that reason, I should blame myself for this situation. Now, I know this might be difficult to swallow, but look at the way thinking like this helps us. We don't get so angry at the person harming us and don't create more negative karma to experience the same problems again in the future. For it is definite that if I get angry with a person harming me and harming back, I will just experience more harm in the future. I will just keep the karmic wheel turning. Whereas, if I refuse to get angry and don't harm the other person, I will not create the negative karma that is the fuel for the karmic cycle. So that cycle will have to stop. Westerners may have a hard time coming to terms with this karmic reasoning, both because we are unfamiliar with it and because we tend to think in terms of guilt and punishment. A prime example is the fundamental preachers in the USA, who say that all the droughts, bad weather, American soldiers being killed in wars and so on is God's punishment for the people of the country being soft on homosexuality. So phrasing that in terms of karma, karma becomes a punishment for our fundamental sinfulness. But this is not a karmic explanation at all. Karma has everything to do with cause and effect and nothing to do with crime and punishment. Pema Chodron cites the example of a child playing with matches and getting burned. the child might realize that being careless with matches results in a painful situation. Or the child might think that the burn is a punishment from mum and dad for being naughty. The first conclusion, Pema Chodron points out, makes the child wiser, while the second merely interferes with the child's intelligence for no benefit at all. Understanding karma like this gives us tremendous freedom to create our own future, says Pema Chodron. The way we relate to being hit on the head with a branch right now affects how we'll relate to being harmed at a later date. Then Shantideva goes on. Both the weapon and my body are the causes of my suffering. Since he gave rise to the weapon and I to the body, with whom should I be angry? Now, I used to have a problem with this verse. Shantideva says that the two causes for my suffering are my body and the other person's weapon. So whose fault is it? When they picked up the stick, as it were, to beat, I held out my body and more or less said, here, hit this. And my point is that I certainly would not willingly hold out my body for someone to hit. If I'm in a tight situation where I could not escape and someone was pounding on me, it's not as though I have given them permission to do it. But as His Holiness explains, the verse implies that if I had not created the karma to take this body, even if the other person was waiting in the alleyway with his stick, the situation would not have arisen. The only reason he's able to lay his stick on my back is because I created the karma to have this body. So at least half the fault for the suffering is mine. And then His Holiness, in his commentary on this text, goes on to say that we are often much more sensitive about small, insignificant things and don't take half as much care about things that have long-term effects. For instance, we get angry if someone talks about us behind our back and cause a huge fuss. But then we think nothing of poisoning all the snails in our garden. Idle chatter about us is just so much hot air that can't harm us one way or another at all. And if we let it go like wind behind our ear, very little pain and anger will arise, and we will not create negative karma for our future suffering. Whereas, when we go out and happily kill lots of creepy crawlies in our garden, we create immense negative karma that will mean a great deal of suffering for us in the future. As Shantideva says in the next verse, if in blind attachment I cling to the suffering abscess of a human form, which cannot bear to be touched, with whom shall I be angry when it is hurt? And now I'll leave you to think about that, for our time is up, and it's time to say goodbye. Let's take a moment to dedicate any positive potential that we've generated from this program to gaining enlightenment to be of greatest benefit to all sentient beings everywhere. Thank you. Thank you for joining the program today. I hope you'll do so again next week. I hope to see you then. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.